The Competitive 40K Network presents Art of War.
Art of War.
Strategy and tactics. Discussions with the best players on the planet. Now your host, Nick Nanavati.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Art of War podcast. I'm your host, Nick Nanavati, and we are joined by a returning guest, Brian Jones, also one of the newest members of the Art of War team. Brian, how are you doing?
I am doing great, Nick. I'm really excited to get to pop on, talk about all the fun we had at the ATC Florida team tournament this past weekend.
Me too. Yeah, we're really excited to have you. That's right. We did go to the ATC American Team Championship tournament in Florida this weekend. Got a lot of local teams, got a few teams traveling from afar. Really awesome five-person team event. We played five rounds, and we're in the spirit of teams becoming more popular. We really wanted to talk about that a lot, basically go through, Brian, your experience, since this was your first time playing with Art of War on the team, and go through kind of what that's like, what the difference is between playing on Art of War versus some other teams you may have played on in the past are, and just generally like how it all went for you. Because we also took some lists that maybe weren't on the meta. Richard brought Admech, I played Demons. You brought Imperial Knights, of course. It was a good time.
It was, I had a blast. We all brought what we loved, and I think it was probably the most surprising thing to everybody there.
Yeah, I think there's a real element of surprise in the team format, and we'll definitely talk about that as well. So this is part one of a two-part conversation. In part one, we're going to talk about Brian's experience on the team tournaments. We're going to get to know Brian. We're going to get to know the team tournament's experience of Warhammer and kind of how it all works and how you can make these unorthodox army choices play and what the ebbs and flows of teams are. And then in part two, for those of you who want that more gritty nature of the raw 40K strategy and tactics, we're going to go through Brian's actual games with Imperial Knights of all factions. A faction largely written off competitively, but there's a place for everything in teams, and that's so awesome. You excited, Brian?
I am. I'm very much excited.
I'm very excited as well. All right, let's get into it. Brian, why don't you talk to us about how your team experience has been prior to this weekend? What is your relationship with Team Warhammer?
Yeah, I've always loved doubles. It's actually what got me kind of into 40K competitively for the first time. Almost 18 years ago. So I played in a doubles tournament with my buddy in fourth going into fifth edition with Space Marines and Necrons together, which was really fun. A lot of 3+ saves. And just discovered that doubles was such a cool way to learn about 40K. And so continued doing that. And then we scaled it up to, we gathered a bunch of our friends to ATC in 2019, right before the pandemic and everything. We went as a five-man team. Only two of us had ever played 40K in a tournament setting before out of the five. We did finish dead last at ATC that year, but we had an absolute blast. And we were able to like work our pairings to get everybody at least one win. Brought that same group of friends to the Las Vegas team tournament coming out of the pandemic. Similarly, had a ton of fun. And that was right as Admech and Drukhari were in their heyday in ninth edition. And then, yeah, I got to invited into Team USA this past year, back in 2023. And it just opened my eyes to everything that teams can be. I think it's probably my favorite way of experiencing 40K. And I would the way I would endorse that is saying that WTC is probably my favorite 40K experience. And last year when I went, I didn't play. I went as a coach, and it was my favorite 40K experience. So if that gives anyone kind of the impression of just what the team's environment brings to me, that's hopefully it.
I love that you love teams. It's no secret from anyone who's a longtime listener that teams is my favorite way to play Warhammer as well. The World Team Championships is a little bit of an exclusive event. For largely, it's you have to be invited on your national team or be at least know someone on your national team and get in through that. So what... can you like explain the WTC to some people who maybe have not had that opportunity, Brian?
Yeah. So, I mean, at the surface level and the way I've always explained it to anybody who is like not a 40K fan, but is like, I don't understand why you're going to Europe. It's the World Cup for 40K, which is a really, really cool thing to think about. So every nation gets to be able to send its own team. I think last year it was like 47, and this year it's lining up to be even more. At the tournament we're at this weekend, got to hear that South Korea is getting to send a team for the first time ever to WTC. And so every country that wants to participate, they sign up, they have a designated captain for the national team that works with the WTC organization. You bring a team of 8 players, and you can bring coaches as well. And you're going to bring 8 lists that you think will do well. And I will say 8 is a very different world than the 5 we played this weekend. And then you're there for 3 days of just total 40K mayhem. Or I guess it's 4 days now with the way they split the first day. But you do a pod setting similar to like group play in the World Cup, where you're paired with 3 other nations. You'll all play each other. And then the top 2 teams will come out of each pod into kind of the bracket that could win it all. And you'll get to continue to play elimination matches from there as you work forward. And it's every round is you're pairing into another country that has 8 unique lists to go against your own. And my favorite component, honestly, of WTC was sitting with the team each night, preparing for our match the next day and reviewing each list of the opponents, each list of ours, and how we thought they all lined up into it. And hearing from different faction experts on, well, if I was taking this on that mission and looking at this terrain, this is exactly how I'd approach it. And I think it's just some of the most valuable learning I've ever gotten in 40K.
I think that's a really interesting answer too, because like, no one really talks about the matchup theory and the pairings being like a learning process. Everyone talks about like how it's such an important aspect of teams, because basically you have these 18 players on your team with 8 different lists, like you mentioned, or 5 in the tournament we went to, and you have to pair, and you could pair just like, you know, this, we think this is an okay matchup. This army looks cool. That army looks cool. Let's battle them. Or you can pair with like a long-term strategy in a macro sense of the pairings thing, which is kind of what the World Team Championships is all about. And you learn a lot about the micro interactions between the different factions. Like, why does Astra Militarum beat Custodes? Well, it's because of this, this, and this. And like, what can you do to counterplay it? Maybe does the terrain matter? Like, all those things are variables, like the deployment zone or the mission even. Ryan, what do you love about teams? Like, why is it your favorite style event?
So, in a single setting, generally I'm bringing Imperial Knights, and I get to learn about other armies, but only when I'm directly playing them. And usually then I'm only learning about their strategy as it pertains to my faction. And so you get just a limited slice of, you know, introspection into that army. Sitting in a room and discussing each list into each opposing list, depending on the mission, I learned so much more about how every army functions. And for me, it was eye-opening. I left WTC and was like, you know what? Votan's going to be my next hobby project, and I'm about finished with it now. And that came out of just hearing us discuss all of these other factions and realizing how much I wanted to branch out as a result. And I think my other favorite part, like just on the complete opposite side, is the social side, is you're not alone. I think for me, initially getting into competitive 40K, one of my biggest mental hurdles was going to a tournament, you know, potentially on the opposite side of the country where I maybe didn't know anybody that well. And how do I go and not be like socially stressed out and have a good time? And Teams is just such an immediate way to plug into your community and build some great relationships with other 40K players.
Yeah, not only does it solidifies your bonds with the players on your team, it's like a real brotherhood or sisterhood type thing where you win together, lose together for an entire weekend and all your decisions affect each other. But you also, the camaraderie amongst everybody in the room for team turns, you make friends. Like, you just really do. People are more forward. They're more open. You're all there for the same purpose. It's a great way to meet people as opposed to a singles tournament, which can be a little bit like if you don't already have a friend group in Warhammer, you're just on your own. It can be intimidating.
Exactly. And, you know, I think about from this past weekend at ATC Florida, you know, we turned to each other at the end of the tournament. We're like, did any of us really win when we compare ourselves to the Lobsters 2, the Search for Connor, the one of the teams that came and just they dressed as lobsters before every match. Please look for photos if you're listening to this. And they had just so much fun. And all that does is enhance the game for me. Like, right, I'm there and there's 10 other people around me having a great time instead of just me and my one opponent. It's just amping it up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you win together, lose together, and your whole team is having fun. Their whole team is having fun. Everyone's dressed up as lobsters dancing. It's so cool. That's a team experience. And like a lot of teams have themes like that. I know 1 year when we went to ATC, this is back in the days, my team dressed up in rompers, and it was like a whole thing. I had a dinosaur onesie. It was great.
Yeah, I think it's I feel the community even more through a team environment than I do in singles sometimes. And it's, yeah, you, I feel like I left every game with, in this setting, 5 new friends, as well as the, you know, 4 friends I was already playing the game with.
So let's shift the topic of conversation just ever so slightly. Let's talk about more the ATC Florida event that we went to this past tournament. You played Imperial Knights for Art of War here, and we brought like unorthodox lists. We brought Admech, I played Demons, Brian brought his Knights, Jack played his Blood Angels, and Quentin played Death Guard. So everyone's kind of playing their excited armies that they're really enjoying right now, regardless of the power level. How did you feel about that going into the event, Brian? Were you concerned that our team was not bringing the medalists or anything, so it, you know, that could cost us?
I did it initially. I was concerned about being a handicap for you guys. I will say that first and foremost. But I think what we all saw in action, right, is that you always hear when people are a new player and they're getting into it, and people are offering advice like, "Look, just pick a faction or an army that you really like and get to know it, rather than trying to hop from medalist to medalist." And what I feel like our weekend really highlighted was that if you know your army inside and out, it doesn't matter that you may not be the most metalist. Hell, I think, you know, Imperial Knights are Richard and I are down at the bottom of the power rankings right now as far as factions go. But when you know how to play that army, and particularly in a team setting, you can still not only like win your individual game, but help your team to victory. And that's one of the biggest things in a team setting, is that you don't necessarily have to win your matchup, right? Like, I brought Imperial Knights knowing that, hey, other than maybe two really bad matchups, I can play for a draw in just about anything. And that was really helpful to the team, because it was, I could get rid of a list that you guys didn't want to play, and instead you could pair into something that you felt like you could score really high into. And so even though my faction is not what you would call meta or the most powerful, I had a role on our team, and I feel like it helped us along the way.
Absolutely. I knew when we were creating this team comp, it was already going to be like a little crazy, right? Admech, Demons, Knights, like what even is this team comp? But you still have to be prepared to play against Canoptic Wraiths and Unnerfed Custodes and all kinds of stuff. So how do you do that? And it's basically figure out what jobs you can play. A lot of times, armies that have problems, in air quotes here, or bad, they're not good in the meta or whatever, are not good because they might have a problem with a specific build, or they might have like a problem with an archetype. Like, this army just can't handle getting indirect fired to death behind walls. Like, some people just can't handle that. However, in teams, you get a lot of flexibility. It's like, okay, Brian's Knights, he really just can't play against like mass anti-tanks, so I'll just pair him around that. Or maybe he'll take that for the team if lots of our people can't pair against mass anti-tank. And then we go into it with the knowledge that this is a bad matchup for Brian. So we'll like, Brian, don't try to push for a win and try to, you know, roll your dice out of this problem. Just embrace that it sucks and like hide behind terrain, play a little cagey. You know, if you lose but hold two objectives behind walls for the entire game and score an okay amount of secondary points, that's like 60, 70 points on your scoreboard. Even if they beat you because they held three objectives all game, they're going to beat you like 80 to 60. That's not that bad. You got a decent win or a decent loss, but it helped our team overall. So there's a lot of layers to think about that. Where did you find our strategy was from your perspective on that whole element to pairings?
I think our strategy definitely changed each pairings. And I'll preface it by saying, like, the first time I went to a team tournament, we had no idea how to strategize for pairing. So it was just like, hey, could you play this? Maybe, I don't know. Sure, all right, go for it. And instead here in us preparing, our matrix, I think they look different every round, because some rounds it was like, hey, there's four matchups here that I feel very confident with Knights in two that I can bring home like a medium-sized win for us. And then versus our first round, you know, I got paired into Brightlance Town Eldar, and it was population Imperial Knights. And unfortunately, that doesn't go well for me. They had two links as well. And it's just, you know, but I was able to bring home a not terrible loss while you guys were able to win on other tables. And so the pairing process really begins with, you know, thinking about, okay, we draw up our little matrix, you know, our 5x5 square. How do we each do against each of these armies? Let's predict. Okay. So we see like, maybe we don't want Richard and Brian to go against this one. So how can we work to avoid that? And so we can use our first defender as an army that, okay, we know they have one bad matchup. So they can say no to that one if it comes and pick the other one, and they're going to have their table choice, which can hopefully impact it. And I know, right, Nick, for you, table choices may be less important for Demons, but it definitely had the ability to impact the matchup for my Imperial Knights in a lot of these settings.
Well, to that point, Brian, I think it was really complimentary that my army didn't care about table choice. Because if you have five armies that want to play on the same or want to care about their table, not everybody gets to choose. And as you get towards the last matchups, there's no tables left to choose from. You're getting stuck with what you're getting stuck with. So having an army like Demons in the mix allowed us to be a little more table agnostic than some teams that have maybe multiple gunline armies that all want the open table, as an example. But yeah, yeah. I think another thing you highlight is that matrix that we create, the 5x5 little square thing, and how we change that every round to account for the mission and the opponent's team composition. Could you break that down for us a little more?
Yeah. So, you know, you think of it as a little 5x5 chart. Everybody's got their own tic-tac-toe box against each of the opponent's factions. And what you're looking at is you're going, okay, with this mission, how can I do against that army? And so a lot of times I would be able to come to you and say, okay, we have against this Eldar, I can play for a small loss. I can just kind of hide behind walls, hold objectives, get the secondaries I can get, and do that. Or on the flip side, it was like, I think we had a Necron matchup in that pairing as well. And I was like, Imperial Knights, body Catan. I would love this matchup. I can get us a big win there if we need to. And I ended up taking the Eldar so that we could get the favorable matchups everyone else could align with. And how we worked towards that is by each of us going down the list and saying, okay, this one matchup is terrible for me. I think I could score, you know, in the WTC scoring, I could score a 10 here, which is a draw. Or I think I could score a 12, like a small win. Or this is really good for me. I feel like I could score a 16, like a pretty decent size win. And that gave you, our captain, kind of the information you needed when you're looking at, all right, who do I want to put out as first defender? And then once they gave us two cards for attackers, you were immediately able to look at the matrix and go, okay, well, which one of these offers the better option, not only for this particular matchup, but how would it impact our later matchups if we get rid of this possible opponent?
Right. I think that's a great way to break it down, because there's two sides to, like, what matchup do you choose or who do you put out as a defender? One, it, like, if I put out you as a defender, Brian, they have two good counters. Maybe it's like Brightland Spam Eldar and, like, I don't know, triple Rogaldorn, triple Manticore, things knights don't like.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, maybe Brian wasn't the right choice as first defender because I just handed him a big loss no matter which way we slice this cake. But in other form, in other team comps, there's not two answers to Imperial Knights. So Brian can go out there, choose not to play against the Brightlance Eldar and take whatever else they give us with his table choice. And Knights are an army that really care about table choice because of moving around and seeing line of sight and things like that. But then it's not so simple, because maybe taking out that other thing that isn't Brightlance Eldar is taking, like, accepting that game actually has more benefit or less benefit for a team down the line. A good example is if they have, like, one really weak list that our whole team just dumpster fires. This happens often with newer players on a team or something like that. And if we can spot that weak list, we can all just be like, all right, who's going to beat the crap out of it? And if they hide that into Brian, because by, you know, giving us that Brightlance Eldar and this weaker army, well, Brian's not necessarily going to body that weaker army, so we're giving that weaker army a lot more value than it would get against anybody else, but the Brightlance Eldar isn't tabling Brian. Or we can choose, like we did in round one, like you said, choose the Brightlance Eldar, Brian, keep it close, which we know you can do, and then somebody else bodies this weaker army, which is kind of what happened.
Yeah, it's such an interesting approach, because you've got to be able to talk bluntly with the people you're playing with. Like, I think that's why it's good to go with friends and to be able to be like, hey, look, no BS. Like, do you think you would score an 80, or are you talking like you're going to score 100 against that team? Because, right, you have to think about the scale of victory, because there were a couple of matchups that came through that, like, all of us had kind of decently okay. And then we would look and Richard would be like, oh, I would score like an 18 on that. And we're like, well, it's pretty hard to find a matchup that AdMech can do that into. So we should let Richard take that one. The rest of us can get high scores elsewhere, and that just helps us all as a team.
Right, definitely. So it's always recognizing, like, the malleable nature of the matrix and, like, how you can adjust your choices based on their choices. It's not about predicting what they can do, because that's a fool's errand. It's very much about having good information, good solid information, and then it's kind of a math equation, right? Like, at that point, you could optimize, like, an AI program to literally tell you the best mathematical outcome for your team. But a lot of that is the foundation and solidity of the numbers behind it. I find a lot of teams get their matrix wrong and it sets them up for failure. And a lot of times that can be like, I beat this army, but I've done it against somebody maybe less experienced and I didn't take that into account. So I put it as a win in my matrix because I've experienced beating this army. But against a better opponent, they played a way I didn't see coming, or that I didn't take into account this mission or terrain factor. And all of a sudden, you know, the scenario is different and I'm losing. And that can cost the team an entire round. How did we navigate around that, Brian?
Yeah, I think so. Not only is there the communication component initially as you're doing the pairings, but also the communicating throughout the matches. And I think, you know, you took that responsibility on as our captain of kind of being able to take the opportunity to step back from your game for a minute, check in with each of us as we were playing, get a feeling for where we were, like where we were going as a team, and tell us either, hey, see if you can squeeze a few more points out of it, or as Nick had to come and tell me, Brian, don't do anything stupid. Just try to get the score you told us. Like, please don't be incredibly aggressive. And it's like, oh, all right. And I think there's the captain's perspective and what they're responsible for. And then the part that was probably took me the longest playing in teams to get to is that your mentality as an individual player has got to be different than singles, right? In a singles matchup, if you're trailing behind like 10, 15 points going into round three, you're like, all right, I got to find a way to push and really like, I'm going to have to take a risk to go for it to try to win this. That's not true in teams. Your job might just be to keep it close. And so you're going to go, well, I could like all out send and try to knock you out if I can roll super hot. And it could flip this game state. Or if you, my captain, came and I just said, hey, I need you to bring home the score you predicted. I'm just going to stand here behind the wall. I know it might not be interactive, but I'm going to secure the points that I need. And that's what I need to do for my team to win overall. And that's sometimes the hardest thing for us to all see, like that seeing the forest for the trees. All you can see is that matchup in front of you. And you're like drooling at like, I just want a full send and see if I can roll hot enough to kill everything. But if you don't, you're going to get blown out. And that's not what your team needs. And you gotta like hold back that like inner world eater within you and embrace the like greater tactical picture.
Definitely. And the other side to that, Brian, because that happened in real time, right? Like I did my little rounds as I do, like maybe 15, 20, 30 minutes into the round. I'm like, how are you doing? Is anything stupid happened? Like who went first, if that's a big factor? Or, you know, like how are you trending towards the score you told me you're gonna get in the beginning, or up, down, where are we at? And usually if your pairings are good, you're probably in at least the draw range. You're probably set up to win if you did good pairings. And good pairings comes from all that stuff we just talked about with understanding your matrix and you're trusting your team and all that stuff. But once the round actually begins, things change. Dice happen. You know, he hits the 9-inch charge out of reserve. Oh, my God. So you got to understand from the captain's perspective where everybody is at. Not only, you know, is their game going sideways or is it going according to plan or is it going even better, but also who has pivot points that matter in the moment still? So I have to have like a really good understanding of what matters in each matchup. So for example, Jack's games are always very cagey until they're not. He has Blood Angels and they hide behind walls and they stage and nothing is happening until 2,000 points of Blood Angels charge your face. So that opening only occurs if it exists. Otherwise, he will continue to just sit behind walls and stuff. So I'm just like eyeing up Jack's table being like, all right, Jack, have you gone for it or have you not gone for it? And once I see the Blood Angels are going for it, I ask them, all right, what's happening? And if I don't see they're going for it, then I kind of know Jack is still in the holding pattern. He's no ability to push yet. And then, you know, you can kind of take that mentality across. Like, and then Richard's games, Richard's playing Admech. They're one of literally the worst factions in the game, and they have zero damage output. If I ask him to push from his expected 9 to a 12, he cannot do it, you know? So, yep. Like, there's different players and different armies no do different pull. Things.
And I think that communication is probably one of the biggest hurdles for anybody just getting into teams. I think most circuits now have embraced the ability to bring a coach. And I strongly encourage, like, if you're getting some friends together and you're going to go for the first time, bring a coach. Like, see if somebody's willing to just come along. They're not going to play, but they're going to help be that communication between tables. Because, you know, Nick, candidly, I don't think I'm in a place mentally where I can both map my game and get up, walk away, see everybody else's, think about that, and then drop back into my game. That takes a level of like just comfort in the game that is, I think, it's hard to achieve. So I think if you try to do that, where if you're going to be like, all right, I got my friends together, I'm going to be team captain, I'm going to like do our pairings, and I'll try to get out of my games and check on everybody else's. At least when I did that the first time, it was so stressful, it wasn't fun.
It's definitely a learned skill. It's not my first team tournament.
Yeah. And so I think embrace that, like being able to bring a coach. I look at it as it's a chance to bring a sixth friend if it's a 5-person tournament. And
I think that's how you have to pitch it too, because it's like the person at the Warhammer tournament not playing Warhammer might get a little bored, right? Or might not have the best time. But like, you're hanging out with your friends. Like, we got an Airbnb, like, we got to dinner. It was like a fun weekend with the boys, yeah. You know, it was just nice. So like, add a sixth friend to that. And the coach's job, and especially five-man teams, like not WTC coaching, that's a different beast, but most coach jobs are kind of chill. Just like check on the games and make sure everyone knows what's up, make sure everyone has water.
Yeah, and then you're just telling, hey, these other games are going this. If you have a chance to push, do it. And so, and I also think for anybody who's like, hey, I want to learn more about how more armies play in 40K, coaching is a great thing, because look at it as you're getting to watch five games in real time and see where the decision points are. Like, coaching is not a bad gig. You can learn so much from it. So I think my advice to any new any group that's like, we want to get into teams, but we're just really not sure about how we can handle it, get that sixth friend. Like, hey, let's all go. We can rotate each tournament who gets to be the coach and learn and see who's best at it. Like, just embrace that, because it is. It's a chance to have a great weekend with five other friends.
Do you spend tons of hours hunched over a table building and painting models? Maybe you're up late at night reading about all the Warhammer 40K lore. Whatever your optical needs, Serious Readers has got you covered. They produce amazing, high-quality HD lighting which simulates daylight indoors. It's amazing for painting or reading, and it's recommended by over 500 opticians. You can use discount code AOW to save £100 on any HD light that's over £100. Visiting landing page seriousreaders.com/AOW, that's seriousreaders.com/AOW, with the discount code AOW. There's a link below in the description of the podcast episode. So what's the difference in your mind between shifting from a singles mentality and a singles player to a team player? And like, logistically as well, Brian, because I know it's easier and more accessible to play singles tournaments, right? They're just kind of all over the place if you live in populated areas, and then they don't require organizing and herding cats. You know, it's just go to the tournament. So how do you get into teams?
I think it's, finding your local group who plays together, at your local hobby shop, or, those guys that are in your area that you all run into each other at singles tournaments every time. Like, everybody's got those, like, I know these three guys from my local meta that I'll wind up playing at like every GT I go to, no matter what. And then you go, all right, hey, why don't we try playing in a team tournament? It's different. It's a chance to learn. And, I think the hurdles mentality wise is teams teaches you that it's okay to lose. Like, but what you want to focus on is controlling your loss. And I actually think that's a really transferable skill into singles, because sometimes you're in a really horrible pairing and you've got to just control it as much as possible until you have a moment to push. And so learning how and when to do that in teams, where you have the bit of a cushion and the cover of the rest of your team trying to do well, you can really A, learn to play your own faction better in singles, but B, you just develop a better awareness and understanding of the game. Everything goes from just a binary breakpoint of like, I either win or lose this interaction, to, okay, how does this single interaction impact the overall score? And will it keep it closer? Is it worth the risk? Is it not? It just, for the in-game thinking, it brings you a different perspective. And I think, again, it's another layer of learning your faction and just how to approach 40K strategy as a whole.
I think that point, basically learning how to lose and learning to hold your aggression, control your inner world leader, basically, and then looking for opportunities to push and steal points, is actually what helped me become very good at Warhammer. Just the repetition of learning that team process, because obviously when I first started team turns, I was not some savant at it. I was roughing around the edges, losing, didn't know how to lose, all that kinds of stuff. So basically, it's the process of learning to spot mistakes, not make mistakes, to hold a points floor, basically get the score guaranteed. And then you kind of put it onto your opponent to push you around in a way that doesn't open them up to losing accidentally. A lot of games I win are games that I am in a losing position, but I hold my ground. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to keep on losing by a little and making small edge plays to try to shift that and shift it, a little bit, as opposed to just sending the Hail Mary. I think a lot of players throw in the towel of like, I'm losing, time to throw my entire army into the open and hope I roll sixes. And, mathematically that shouldn't work. You're literally just trying to pass a ball into the end zone and catch it. I think you get a lot better at the game by instead of doing that, really trying to see, okay, can I just like play a little better, play a little tighter and squeeze points instead of massively try to shift the war?
Yeah. And it's a great way of learning, because when you've accepted that, you're very much focused on the interactions in the game versus the overall score in some ways. And as you said, that's where you learn. And then it's really rewarding when like you told your team, like, I think I can keep this to like a 5-15. You come back with like an 8, and your team like is ready to pick you up on their shoulders and carry you around the room. You're like, I lost, but man, this feels like I know that I overperformed and I did what my team needed me to do. It's that's the other component that I think is really nice in a team setting, is like, for, you know, we've all gone to a GT where you've like wound up 0-5, 0-6, like you're in that wooden spoon contest to just, I got my face kicked in every time. And Teams gives you that, hey, even though I lost, like I did what my team needed me to do and we won as a result, or we did better as a result. And
it
for
also,
me, that
if you're a weaker player, it kind of gives you a home too, because you can find a team of like strong players that you're friends with. They can recognize that maybe you just don't have enough time to practice as much as you used to, or you're not as invested as they are, but you can still go and not just be a deadweight 4-person team in a 5-person team event. Like, there's real value to having a good list that maybe you don't necessarily know how to use intimately, and you just play it as best as you can, but keep that loss close. And like, you know, the opponent team doesn't necessarily know that you're inexperienced or that you just swapped onto this army. So they're going to pair around you as if you're like the world's best world leaders player. You know, it's crazy. So there's a lot of value you can glean even through inexperience, where in a singles tournament, experience will just show.
Yeah. And it's very hard sometimes to learn from absolute blowout losses in singles. Like when your game is over in 30 minutes, you're just like, cool, what do I do for the rest of the day? Even if that happens here, you're both going to be at that table for a while longer. Your opponent can talk to you through that matchup, and then you can watch your teammates play and continue to learn. I just think it's, for anybody who's like, I don't have a lot of time to practice, I could probably go to like one tournament, you know, every half year. I really would encourage you, think about a team tournament, just from both the fun and social factor and from maximizing your time and learning in 40K, if that is a goal you have set for yourself.
Definitely. All right, Brian. So one more question for you before we shift our topic to part two, where we talk about the games and the rounds and the actual 40K part of this discussion. What was the list you took to this team tournament?
Yeah, I brought kind of what I feel like is my standard take-all-comers Imperial Knights list. So I brought an Imperial Cerastus Knight Lancer, because I feel like it's the biggest tank we've got. It's got a 4-up invuln all the time and 25 wounds. I brought my Crusader with Mysterious Guardian, so that once per game it gets to pretend to be a Calidus Assassin, which is just an eye-opening level of gameplay and ability to flip the table. I had one opponent who was terrified because he mistook it for every turn, and he was absolutely terrified that Knight could just teleport around every round. And then I brought my Canis Rex, best data sheet we've got, a couple of squads of Inquisitorial Henchmen, a Calidus Assassin, and then 3 of my Armature Warglaives.
Beautiful. So just like your normal, like if you were going to a singles tournament Imperial Knights list, and we all know Imperial Knights are like not necessarily where it's at in the singles world, or just like in the winning percentages of armies. So like, what was your job in Teams, and how did this army fit that role?
Yeah, I think, so you can take a lot of approaches as you go into Teams and you build your team comp. You can take skew lists, or like, Nick, you and I have discussed, I love the approach of, we're going to all 5 bring our best kind of take all comers lists, and then we'll just try to flex to each best pairings, but knowing that we should be able to hopefully face anything. And so my job, like as we went through and filled out the test matrix, I realized that, again, outside of like maybe 2 matchups, which of course we got one of them in our first round of like a pure gunline Tau, I could play for a draw or a small win, because I had the ability to keep it close. GW terrain setups really offer good flexibility in Imperial Knights. And so it was, look, I'm here to take whatever list we feel like we can't maximize value from someone else, so that you can maximize value into a list that you can win big or avoid a huge loss. And I think in 3 of our rounds, that was me being first defender with the goal of taking something hopefully off of the table. And then in a couple of others, I wound up being like second defender or an attacker, even in one case, because we wound up having even better defenders with me to take other lists off the table. But I was very confident in my role of, hey, I feel like I can play for a draw or a small win in just about anything. You tell me, the rest of the team tell me what they need and what they need me to take on. And I think there's a lot of value of that when, you know, with Jack and his Blood Angels, man, if we put him in the right pairing, he can just mash and pick up a whole table in two turns.
Yeah. And it's also having those kinds of armies that can like push, right? Like Brian, I know I told you not to push in a lot of places. I know you can, but Jack's army is designed to just push the button, right? Like he just sends it and then 2000 points of army dies. So it's like you have armies like Death Guard who don't push. Death Guard just is a really slow, you know, hold the line kind of army. Same with AdMech. Demons are sort of flexible. Knights are sort of flexible in the way that big models can theoretically table everything. But they're also, if you don't pass your four ups, it's all over. And then Blood Angels was like a consistent attacker in terms of like really bringing home those point scores. So that was kind of our general strategy overall, for sure.
Yeah.
And you definitely...
And it's something you've got to understand. And like, you've got to give feedback to your teammates too. Cause right, Quentin came after we were wrapping up day one. It was like, I'm really like, you can't come and tell me to push. Like the speed just isn't there for Death Guard. So it was, we knew though, when we put Quentin into a good setup that he was going to stick to the plan and bring that score back. There was no like high variance in what Quentin was doing. And that's so valuable.
Right. Right. Like some armies, there is high variance. Like if Jack screws up the pushing with the Blood Angel, like it can be all over. He's got to stage properly, execute those charges correctly. So you got to put the players you're confident on being able to put that plan on. Like, I know Jack can kill people. He's been doing it for years. But, you know, Quentin with the Death Guard, they don't have that ability to push. And you can learn round by round by round who's good at what. Like, I'm a big believer that a team gets better as the tournament goes on. So, like, the kind of that information, right? Like, in the early rounds, I was thinking Death Guard's a good army. Quinn can push people around. He's got anti-infantry flamers everywhere. But now the speed's not there. And that wasn't a consideration because he's got all these rhinos. You would think the rhinos really helped the speed problem. But ultimately, Death Guard's still Death Guard. So he came to us. He's like, I can't push around people. If I tell you I'm getting 12, it's not going to turn into a 20. So, you know, we had to recognize that. So that kind of brings us to the end of this part one, Brian. It's been awesome talking about teams with you. Is there anything you want to share with the audience about team tournaments and why they should get into it at all that we haven't already, I guess?
Yeah. I'll just say, I think it's one of the best ways to enjoy 40K, particularly with a group of friends. You know, we got to make a weekend. I look at it as we're all, you know, as we become adults, it's harder to get together with friends. You can all combine for the same tournament on a weekend. We got to go out. We had a nice dinner, hung out, had some drinks. We had a great Airbnb and just got to spend some time together. And that can't be overstated as far as like how much, particularly for me, that social component of this hobby is. So I just think if you're on the fence, you know, Art of War's got a channel set up if you're trying to find a group to go and play with. And even if you're struggling, you're afraid to message somebody, help, feel free, message me on Discord. I will help anybody who's interested in getting into teams try to find a group to go with, just because it's such a great way to get introduced to our community.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Brian. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this team tournament talk we had about Warhammer. I think it's an evolving and emerging way to play Warhammer. There's more team tournaments available, at least in America, than ever before. And if you have the ability, definitely make it a priority to get involved in team tournaments. Brian and I think we're both in alignment here. That is our favorite ways of playing Warhammer. And I've heard many people play their first team tournament and then come to me like, you're totally right. This is the best way to play Warhammer. And, you know, just give it a shot. Give it an honest shot. But if you need help finding friends, you can do so in our Discord server. You get access to our Discord server when you sign up for this Patreon to support part two of the show. In part two of the show, Brian and I are going to go through all of our pairings and our tactics and our Brian's game by game with his Imperial Knights, telling you how he kept his losses close and how he pushed for big wins in the moment mid-tournament against different matchups. And Brian played some real lists out there. Brightlance Eldar, Canoptic Court Raids. It's some good stuff that Brian has done for us. So you want to hear how he's making it work with Knights, you want to make some friends in our Discord, check out patreon.com/AOW40K and definitely hit that subscribe button. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next week.
Like what you just listened to? Check out Art of War Down Under and Art of War Unbroken on the competitive 40K network. Theartofwar40k.com.